The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hey everyone, I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Welcome back. Thank you all for tuning in today and Happy New Year. We hope you've all had a wonderful start to 2026 and we're looking forward to sharing new cases this year. You know, in 2025, we didn't have any major updates on the cases we've covered, but let's hope that we do in 2026. I'm going to take sort of a different approach with telling today's case. There's very little information available about the victim, honestly, without the Unsolved Mysteries coverage, which was actually the first episode of Unsolved Mysteries hosted by Robert Stack. We wouldn't be able to cover this case. So thank you, Unsolved Mysteries. But even with that, there's not a lot of information. So we're going to delve into the case pretty much immediately. On Tuesday, April 29th, 1986, a farmer in Oklahoma noticed a plume of smoke rising in the distance. It was beyond his property line, but close enough for him to take notice and prompt him to call local law enforcement. And within about 20 minutes, the Oklahoma Highway Patrol arrived at the scene. The smoke was coming from a rural road outside the mid-sized city of Lawton. And when I say rural, I mean very rural. There's nothing going on around this area for miles going in any direction. The highway patrol quickly identified the source of the smoke. It was a car engulfed in flames lodged into a deserted bridge. The intense heat had melted the guardrail it struck. Once the local fire department extinguished the blaze, they determined that someone had been behind the wheel and that person was now deceased and burned beyond recognition. It was apparent that the fire had not just started. It had certainly been burning for some time when they came upon it around 11 a.m. They had no opportunity to save the person inside the car. The authorities determined the car was registered to a 54-year-old Pat Conway of Lawton. So the crash site was about 15 miles or 24 kilometers from his residence. They also learned that Pat had been married to a 50-year-old woman named Aileen for 33 years, and together they had 7 children, 4 daughters and 3 sons. Pat owned a flooring business while Aileen was a stay-at-home mom. And to my knowledge, they had lived in Lawton for most of their lives. The remains recovered from the vehicle were subsequently identified as belonging to Aileen. When law enforcement informed Pat of Aileen's death, they presented it as a tragic accident because that's what it appeared to be. Based on the skid marks, investigators estimated the car's speed at roughly 50 to 60 miles per hour prior to impact, meaning when she, assuming Aileen was driving, hit the brakes before crashing, she was probably traveling between 50 and 60 miles per hour. She tried to stop the crash. So law enforcement ruled this a single vehicle fatality accident without, from what I can tell, establishing what caused the car to burst into flames. Sure, there are ways a car could catch on fire after crashing into a guardrail like that and going off the side of the road. But shouldn't they figure out why that happened before ruling it a single vehicle accident? And why did the accident occur in the first place? I understand they may not be able to answer that part, but this occurred on a rural two-lane road in broad daylight. What caused Aileen to presumably swerve off the road? Another way to look at it is, did something go wrong with Aileen's car that caused her to veer off the road and crash? Maybe the damage to Aileen's car was so severe that they couldn't determine if something went wrong with the car. A fire could certainly complicate and destroy evidence of malfunction, but no one has said that.
It could also be possible that she had some sort of medical episode, right? Do we know if she had any health issues, something that could have caused her to become incapacitated and drive full speed into the guardrail?
It's interesting that you're bringing that up already. Like, it seems like that's kind of your instinct, because that is one of the theories in this case, and we'll come back to it. But to answer your question, we do not know of any medical conditions Aileen may have had. So let's say, you know, there was something that went wrong with Aileen's car and caused her to crash. There's still the question of what was she doing in that area? Like I said, Aileen and Pat had lived in Lawton for the majority of their lives, and Pat indicated that they were not familiar with the area of the crash. He had never been over there alone or with Aileen, and he never knew her to even go that direction. Plus, there was no one they knew who lived out there, and it wasn't even on the way to anywhere they would go. Where they lived in Lawton was much more developed than the crash site area. So the location just added to the mystery for Pat. But he was already suspicious that something nefarious had gone on because of the state of their house when he arrived home on the day of the crash. So my presumption about that day is that Aileen and Pat's kids were all at school and Pat was at work, because Aileen was home alone that Tuesday morning. Pat got home a few hours after Aileen's car had been found and uncovered a strange scene in their house, a scene that indicated that either Aileen had been interrupted that morning or left in a hurry for some unknown reason. Their patio door was wide open, and when Pat stepped out into their backyard, he found that water from a hose was pouring into their swimming pool. Aileen wouldn't typically leave the pool filling up when she wasn't home. And she would fill the pool up, but she wouldn't leave it unattended like that. But possibly, more importantly, wouldn't leave the patio door open. Additionally, Aileen's purse was inside next to an armchair with her driver's license and glasses inside the purse. It was also unusual that Aileen left without her purse and driver's license. Again, that seems like something someone would do only if they're in a hurry or possibly planning to drive a very short distance. But clearly, Aileen did not travel a short distance, so we know that wasn't the case. In the glasses being left behind, I initially thought that was alarming, but because they were in her purse, that tells us she probably wasn't wearing them around the house. So I imagine she could have driven without them. And in all of the pictures I found of Aileen, she was not wearing glasses. So she may have worn contacts, and these could have been reading glasses or something along those lines. Either way, this was further evidence that Aileen left in a hurry or was forced to leave.
I feel like if we knew where she typically kept her car keys, it would tell us a lot about the situation she was in. Like if she typically kept them in her purse, then obviously she wasn't in any sort of hurry, because you would think that she would just grab her whole purse and, you know, on the way to the car, fish out her car keys to drive the car. But, you know, if they were hanging on something by the door and she just had to get out fast, that would tell us a lot more about the situation.
Right. That would be really nice to know. It would make the situation, I think, more perplexing if she normally kept her keys in her purse and then pulled them out and then didn't take her purse, right? And if there were some sort of break-in and she was confronted by someone, it would seem like she wouldn't have the time to do that. So I think it's more likely that she either kept them somewhere separately, somewhere where she could just grab them, or even kept them in her car. I don't know how likely that is, but it would explain why she didn't bring her purse. So as Pat ventured into the rest of the house, there were a couple more strange findings. Their ironing board was out with an iron on it, and the iron was still on. And in their bathroom, Pat found that the bathtub was full of what was described as used water. He didn't explain how he knew the water was used, but maybe there was soap residue or bubbles in it. I don't know. I'm sure there were signs that it was used. So this was all so abrupt that she didn't even have time to drain the bathtub. But surely Aileen was clothed in her car, so she had time to get dressed, but not drain the bathtub. But what I think is possibly even stranger here is the iron still being on when she apparently had been taking a bath.
Yeah, maybe she plugged it in prior to taking the bath to get it heated up so it was ready to go when she got out of the bath. But usually they don't take that long to heat up. Maybe it took longer back in the 80s, but I don't know. That is weird how it was still plugged in.
Yeah, I suppose she could have just forgotten to unplug it after she got into the bath and then got out of the bath. I think those are both reasonable explanations. I think, you know, like you said, an iron doesn't take that long to heat up. So I'd be kind of surprised if she plugged it in to heat it up while taking a whole bath. I just don't get it, because both details make it seem like Aileen left abruptly, but the two details don't really fit together that well. You could say it was strange that she was filling up the pool in their backyard while taking a bath, but I suppose that can take a while, so that's easier to envision than the iron situation. This could be something that Pat could have easily clarified. Like maybe Aileen was known to do a lot of multitasking. I mean, they had 7 kids. I'm sure Aileen knew a thing or two about multitasking, but I couldn't find any statements from Pat about that specifically. And finally, the observation that concerned him the most was that their phone's receiver was off the hook. Now, in the Unsolved Mysteries episode, they showed the phone next to the bathtub. And I was like, there's no way they had their phone set up in the bathroom. So I was thinking that must have been a 2-for-1 situation Unsolved Mysteries put together so they could show the bathtub being full of water and the phone being off the hook at the same time, unless this was a cordless landline. But the phone being off the hook stood out to Pat the most, because he speculated that Aileen had attempted to call someone, possibly him or the police, and she was unable to. If the police were able to retrieve any call records from that day, particularly outgoing call records, they haven't shared that.
Maybe she received a call. Like there was an incoming call and it was some sort of emergency and she had to leave right away.
That's a great point. You know, we're all trying to figure out why she left her home and abruptly at that. And that could be the explanation. Someone told her there was some sort of emergency and she needed to get somewhere so urgently that she couldn't even shut the patio door on her way out.
Yeah. I mean, on the other hand, if it was an emergency with one of the kids, I'm sure Pat would have found out about it at some point. right?
That's the thing. There was no real emergency. So it would have to be that someone made something up. But then where did they tell her to go? She wasn't even in an area that she would have known how to navigate. Now, I did find one newspaper article about this case, only one, surprisingly, and it came from the Daily Oklahoman about a month after Aileen's death. The article noted that some pieces of jewelry were missing from the home. The article did mention the iron, the phone off the hook, and the bath water. So I wondered why Unsolved Mysteries did not mention the missing jewelry. I don't know. It could be that by the time they filled that segment, that Pat had found whatever jewelry seemed to be missing, or that detail was just overlooked. But that information came directly from Pat. And he was quoted as saying that he felt robbery was involved in Aileen's death. This will come up again, but we have to keep in mind that the house was not ransacked. It didn't even appear that Aileen's purse had been rummaged through. So the notion that these burglars stole a few pieces of jewelry without leaving any trace of themselves is a little far-fetched. I'm assuming also that this was Aileen's jewelry that's being referenced. So, I mean, we can't rule out that she was wearing it, right? For all we know, when she left the house that day, whatever jewelry was missing could have been on her person. But because her body was burned in the way it was, it would be hard to determine that. And yes, the house scene was strange, but there were no signs of a struggle. Nothing was overturned or anything like that. If you're a burglar, just take all the jewelry. Were they really assessing the value of each piece? Point being, there could be reasonable explanations for the missing jewelry that had nothing to do with Aileen's death. Also, at that time, it was announced that Pat was personally offering a $10,000 reward for credible information related to Aileen's death. I found it so interesting that this was the only article I could find. It's possible that there was more news coverage at the time and those articles just haven't been archived in a way that's accessible, but I can't imagine it got too much attention because the police were treating it as an accident. So the media may have written it off, but I expected to find a few more than just one article. Pat compiled his observations and brought them to law enforcement, the same people who had been treating Aileen's death as an accident. He was met with a lack of interest. So Pat brought the same findings to an investigator with the district attorney's office named Ray Anderson. Ray told Unsolved Mysteries that he initially thought Pat was a grieving widow who was probably in denial about his wife's death. This is not uncommon. But I think in this case, how could you not want or even expect more answers? He's just supposed to accept that his wife abruptly left their home for reasons unknown, drove 15 miles from home to an unfamiliar location, got into a single vehicle accident, and then her car burst into flames, creating a fire so severe that she was completely unrecognizable and her car was more or less destroyed. It's only natural that he would want a little more of an explanation than he received, or at least some effort to get to an explanation, because they could put all the effort in the world and still not get anywhere, but at least try. Despite Ray's initial suspicions, he agreed to help Pat and look into Aileen's death. And as he did, he slowly began to understand Pat's point of view. Pat took Ray to the site of the crash, and as they walked around the area, they came upon a church bulletin from Pat and Aileen's church about 200 feet or 61 meters from where the highway patrol found Aileen's car. Pat was certain that this was the church bulletin that he and Aileen received when they attended a church service just a few days before Aileen's death. And he recalled that Aileen had placed it on the dashboard in their car, and that's where he last saw it. Now, Pat found this to be strange. Aileen routinely drove with her windows up and the AC on. He He never really knew her to drive with the windows down. To which I say, what are we asserting here? I truly want to understand, is the idea that she was driving with the windows up all the way until she was about to crash, then she rolled them down, and then this paper flew out? Because you'd think if she had the windows down before the crash, like well before the crash, it might have flown out before then. But on Unsolved Mysteries, it was stated that the paper could not have flown out of a moving vehicle. It had to be stationary. I never thought we'd be talking about a piece of paper flying out of a car. This didn't make a lot of sense to me because I was thinking, couldn't the abrupt stop alone, like when she crashed, couldn't that have jolted the car? And if she had the window open, that would have caused the bulletin to fly out. What do you think about this idea that the car had to be stationary for this piece of paper to fly out?
Yeah, I don't agree with that at all. I've had papers accidentally fly out of my car when I've been driving with the windows down. See, I'm kind of confused why they were so certain that this couldn't happen.
And I was thinking, if the piece of paper on the dashboard, like he said, that's kind of, you know, more level with the window. So it doesn't seem like it would take a lot for it to slip out if she did have the windows down. Initially, I'd been thinking that Pat's point was, okay, Aileen always drives with her windows rolled up, so someone else must have been driving her car at some point shortly before the crash, if we believe that the paper exited the car. But then when Robert Stack came in and said that the car had to be stationary for some reason, I then was kind of turned around and thinking, what are they getting at here? Evidently, this piece of information led to a theory, though. The theory being that another person was with Aileen and opened the door, engaged the accelerator, and shifted the car into drive in an attempt to force Aileen off the road and into the nearby creek, making the crash appear accidental. But how does that theory play with the skid marks? The skid marks indicate that the person behind the wheel hit the brakes before the impact. So a scenario where the accelerator was rigged in some way doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm still trying to picture how this would exactly play out. Like, they, let's say Aileen was behind the wheel. This other person somehow jammed the accelerator down and escaped the moving vehicle. And then right before the impact, Aileen slammed on the brakes to try to slow the car. I'm having a hard time picturing how this would even be feasible.
Right. And we just have to assume that they had something on hand to rig this accelerator, and they were able to easily overpower Aileen to stay in the position she was in the driver's seat. Or they moved her, if someone else were driving at some point, they moved her to the driver's seat. But I think there's a lot of like mental gymnastics you have to do for this theory. Ray's investigation led the Lawton District Attorney to officially change Aileen's manner of death from accidental to undetermined, which allowed more investigative resources to be put toward Aileen's case. At that time, the DA requested the state fire marshal and the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation to look further into the fire. The fire was something tangible they could work with. However, not literally tangible, because from what I gathered, Aileen's car had already been disposed of. So best they could do was to conduct an experiment. They wanted to establish if the fire was a result of arson, because that investigative work had not been done yet. Someone from the fire marshal's office was interviewed for Unsolved Mysteries, and he said what stuck out to him immediately was how severe the damage was to Aileen's car. It was destroyed, and just going on his experience, he indicated the damage appeared more consistent with the kind of damage you'd see when an accelerant is used. Also, the gas cap on Aileen's car had been removed. And in this investigator's experience, in cases of vehicle arson, the gas cap is often removed. Because of the way this was presented, I'm going to assume that they ruled out that the gas cap had melted in the fire and that I was either found at the scene undamaged by the fire or it was truly missing. If that's accurate and they were able to rule out that I had succumbed to the fire, that feels significant. Did someone siphon gas from the tank or possibly start the fire in that location or even just remove it in the hopes that it would cause the fire to spread more rapidly? There's been no mention of if they could identify where the fire started. But if the gas cap had been missing before Aileen's death for some non-nefarious reason, that could help us understand the intensity of the fire. As part of the investigation, they conducted what were described as informal burn tests. They took samples of upholstery and dashboard, both flame-retardant materials from a car similar to Aileen's. The investigators applied a blowtorch to these materials and observed that once the heat source was removed, the fire extinguished itself, consistent with flame-retardant material. When the materials were subsequently soaked in gasoline, and then they took the blowtorch to it, they were destroyed. Their final opinion was that the level of fire damage observed would not have been likely without the presence of an accelerant. And if an accelerant were used, probably safe to say that this was not Aileen's doing. However, the main theory in this case that we just talked about is a little hard to follow. And to be clear, it's not conclusive that an accelerant was used. This has not been proven, but it was their opinion that the fire was more consistent with a fire you would see if an accelerant were used.
So were they saying that the accelerant used or allegedly used was something in addition to the actual fuel that was in the car already? Assuming the tank was fairly full, if that was ruptured during this high-speed collision, that could have been the accelerant right there, right?
That's a great point. If the fuel line had been ruptured during the accident, that could have definitely increased the intensity of the fire. And to my knowledge, that has not been ruled out. It seemed like they did almost no work to identify what happened with the actual vehicle. And I say that, but at the same time, maybe the fire was so intense that it made it more difficult to ascertain what actually happened. But to your point, that hasn't been ruled out as far as I know. So what they're saying though is, let's say that didn't happen. They're saying there was like some additional accelerant used most likely to sustain the fire.
And just something to add on, I mean, I feel like there's plenty of car fires that happen even with the flame retardant material built into the car. I don't think every single one of those fires is caused by an accelerant or has an accelerant in play.
Absolutely not. Yeah, and that's a good point. We know cars are standardly designed with flame retardant materials inside, and we also know that cars can catch on fire without it being a result of arson. So I think that's a good point because it's like, it's not impossible, right? In the weeks leading up to Aileen's death, there were numerous burglaries reported in Aileen and Pat's neighborhood. Pat theorized that someone visited their home that morning, hoping to burglarize it. They got inside only to find there was someone home. There were no signs of forced entry, but they could have gotten in through an unlocked door. Aileen may have attempted to call for help, hence the phone off the hook, but they got to her before she could make the call. From there, it's a little fuzzy, but he believed they decided they had to kill her because she presumably saw their faces. No one knows what happened next. Did Aileen get in her car and speed away, and the perpetrators followed her until they forced her to crash by running her off the road and they set her car on fire? Did they force her to get in her car and drive and they set up this whole accident scene, kind of like we talked about earlier? No matter which scenario you insert, it doesn't make a lot of sense and it's pretty complex. And it all went down seemingly without a single witness. I think we can all see a situation where Aileen surprised burglars in her home and they attacked her as a result, potentially out of fear that she could identify them, or possibly they even knew Aileen and Pat. But to take it so far that she's found the way she was 15 miles from her home is harder to comprehend. It feels quite elaborate. But on the other hand, what is the alternative? What could explain everything in this case? One scenario I wondered about, and others have speculated about, including you, is that could Aileen have experienced a medical emergency that caused her to leave abruptly? Maybe she was hoping to drive to a nearby hospital, even though she was nowhere near a hospital. And it appeared that because the phone was off the hook, she wanted to call someone, but she didn't call for emergency services. So what happened there? Now, it could have been more of a cognitive emergency than physical. And maybe that would explain why she was in an area that made no sense. She could have been experiencing confusion and disorientation. I mean, like I said before, we don't know a lot about Aileen's medical history. We actually don't know anything. And Pat didn't come out and say that there had been any signs of a cognitive decline in Aileen, or a physical decline for that matter. So we don't have any information to work with in that regard. But emergencies can happen without signs leading up to them. I wondered in particular about the possibility of a stroke. She could have gone to call for help and realized she couldn't think of that phone number. That task became too complicated. But would she have then had the cognitive ability to drive as far as she did before crashing? 15 miles is quite a distance. I don't know. But if we have anyone listening who has expertise on this topic, feel free to weigh in.
I suppose if this was the case, that she was having some sort of medical emergency where she had to drive to the hospital, why wouldn't she just drive to a neighbor's house to see if they could help her more immediately than a hospital could? Unless she did try, which I suppose we don't know that if she did try and no one was home.
Yeah, it's very possible she went to a neighbor's house to try to get help and no one was home. I think we'd have to know more about her neighbor's schedules to be able to say that. But I also didn't explain the area yet, like her neighborhood. The homes were very close together. So she could have easily just walked right next door to a neighbor's house to try to get help, or even a couple of different neighbors' houses, right? And that could all be done in a matter of very little time. So yeah, we don't know why. If she needed urgent help, she wouldn't go to a neighbor's house. But it also doesn't make sense that she would get in the car and drive 15 miles away. So we're already operating under this idea that that scenario would have involved her experiencing likely some disorientation that caused her to act in a way that doesn't make a lot of logical sense. Pat eventually remarried in July 1988, a little more than 2 years after Aileen died, and they remained married for 25 years until he died in 2013. And even though he moved on to another relationship, his dedication to understanding Aileen's death was evident through his actions. Some have speculated that Pat could have been involved in his wife's death, but there's no evidence of that, and I don't see why he would have pushed so hard for there to be an investigation if he were responsible for Aileen's death. That's certainly counterintuitive. As dark as it is, the ideal situation for someone who kills their spouse is that everyone thinks it's an accident. I can't imagine what it felt like to be him or their children, you know, to lose someone in such a confusing, abrupt, and horrible way. It had to be very emotionally taxing. But there are a lot of issues here. And one of the key issues here is that we don't know if Aileen's car was set on fire intentionally. Yes, there were signs that it could have been arson, but it's not definitive. If that could have been determined conclusively, that would very much shape how Aileen's death is viewed. But unfortunately, we don't have that clarity. And I have a lot of thoughts in this case, but I'll try to simplify here. it's interesting in this case how the foul play theory always relates back to a potential burglary. And maybe that's the most likely scenario, but I would be very curious if there's another foul play theory that could be considered here. I think it's just because we don't know much about Aileen's life. It's hard to go that direction. Of course, just on the surface, it doesn't seem like there'd be anyone who would want to harm her. But at the same time, I'm kind of wondering why that wasn't explored more. And my last thought is what makes this case so hard to understand is when you try to put a theory together, no matter which theory you look to, there were several very unlikely and bizarre events that had to occur kind of simultaneously. Not literally simultaneously, but you know what I mean. For that theory to be true, some very strange events had to play out. And I think that makes this case exceedingly difficult to make sense of.
Yeah, this one's confusing. I feel like there could be a multitude of different situations here that caused this. I mean, we really didn't even touch on if this was all our own doing. I mean, that's kind of dark, but I feel like that's a possibility.
Meaning she left the house and intentionally crashed her car.
Yeah.
Which is possible. Yeah.
And maybe the reason for the skid marks was she was having second thoughts right before she was about to crash. On the other hand, it is a little hard to believe that, you know, if someone did break into the house with the intention of burglarizing it and saw that Aileen was home and chased her for 15 miles, it's a really long way to go unless Aileen knew exactly who this person was and they needed to make sure that they didn't get caught. I suppose in that scenario, I could believe it a little bit more. But I think that is more plausible if they chased her for 15 miles and then, you know, right before the bridge somehow bumped her or used their car to steer her into the guardrail. I think that's more plausible than someone rigging her accelerator and somehow causing Aileen to steer into the guardrail. That just doesn't seem all that possible.
I agree that if this is a scenario where somebody followed her out of the house, chased her for 15 miles, the more understandable situation is that, like you said, let's say she's going 50 miles per hour, they go a little bit faster than that and are able to bump her. I mean, that may have caused some damage to their car too, but enough to where it caused her to veer off the road. She realizes what's happening, slams on the brake, but it's too late, right? That makes way more sense in some rigged accelerator situation. But even at that, okay, let's say Aileen escapes from the house and realizes that these people are following her. Why does she leave the city? Why is she going away from all of Lawton, right? She's going out to this rural area. I can't make sense of that. Go anywhere else. And then the other thing is for the person, okay, let's say, like you said, this person knows Aileen, or maybe they don't know her and she just got a really good look at their face and they don't want to be identified. Well, by chasing her for as long as they did, potentially, they were drawing more attention to themselves. Now, apparently, no one saw any sort of chase happening. No one saw Aileen driving. So if that is what happened, then they got away without anyone seeing a thing. But then, okay, let's say they bump her off the road. Are we saying that then her car just happened to catch on fire? Or are we saying that they then happen to have supplies on hand to start that fire? I suppose it could be either scenario. We just don't have enough evidence to say one way or the other. If someone murdered Aileen, this case could probably only be solved by someone talking at this point. So if you have information related to the death of Aileen Conway, the case is not currently being investigated from what I could find, but you can contact the OSBI at 1-800-522-8017. Or you can email tips@osbi.ok.gov and you can remain anonymous. Thank you all so much for listening to this case. That is all for now, but we will be back in 2 weeks for our 100th episode. Be sure to tune in. Bye.
Bye.